Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We haven't done one of these in a couple of months, so yeah, we figured we should do one because we got an expert in USC football recruiting, Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive, of course, everywhere on the peristyle. Gerard has his fingers on the pulse of all things Trojan football recruiting, and we're going to get him back on the show. It's a premium podcast for our USCFootball.com subscribers. Thanks so much for being a VIP member. We appreciate that. That allows us to keep going and give you the kind of coverage you've expected since 1996, which is crazy when you think back that long. But Gerard's on the line with me right now. What's up, Gerard? How are you?
I'm good. Just getting away from spring football for college, and then we transition into spring football for high schools. High schools actually don't have spring football until you start getting to May. So it's kind of a weird thing. You're just barely still in the spring. It's almost more summer, but that's always been when CIF at least has had spring football for high school football. So we're going from spring to spring, from early March into May for spring football.
And you know, a lot of the spring football actually for college happens in the winter. ASU finished spring football on February 28th, so they started before signing day. Like, how crazy is that? But yeah, it's the periods are all different. What high school calls spring and what college calls spring is very different. But we, you know, it's just the terms we're used to using. But you mentioned college spring football, and you got to go out, and I think you were very popular on the final instant analysis of USC spring football 2019. So if you didn't see that up on USCFootball.com, Dan Weber was out of town for a family event, so Gerard stepped in and took over the instant analysis. And I'm looking at the YouTube comments, Gerard, and you were a popular figure there. They like the little different, you know, 1-2 punch of you and Keely.
Oh, nice. Obviously different delivery than Dan, and probably saw things differently. We all see things differently when we go down, but it was an interesting practice. It was a great practice as the final practice. I guess Keely and I both had questions about why that practice was not the format for other practices. We had gone to some other scrimmages, and they really weren't scrimmages. I mean, they were practices with very short 11-on-11 periods, considering that, you know, they're kind of sold as a practice. And the ironic thing is, the actual practice, which was the last practice, wasn't sold as a scrimmage, but it had more 11-on-11 and team live periods than probably any other practice the whole spring. So it was kind of odd. It was the ones that were called scrimmages going into, we were expecting, you know, some scrimmaging, maybe some full field 11-on-11, some down and distance, some scenarios playing out. And we really didn't get to see that the whole spring. But the last practice, we saw a little more of that. It wasn't still, you know, full field 11-on-11. They basically went to midfield after a couple big plays, and then they did a lot of red zone, and then they did some more goal line stuff. So it wasn't a full field 11-on-11, you know, mock game, if you will, scrimmage. And I guess that's sort of what the expectations were. But it was a nice practice to go to. We got to see a little more of the team. The rotation at quarterback was really heavy. It's been really heavy. And we did put up a top performers from spring, if you guys want to check it out on the site, which breaks down what the whole staff basically voted on in terms of their top performers and kind of explaining why each guy was ranked where he was ranked, and sort of, you know, bringing into context also spring and what we saw from spring. And, you know, you don't want to just say, hey, this guy's the top performer because, you know, he was really good at in these two practices, and not acknowledging sometimes that, you know, certain guys maybe didn't get as many reps, or, you know, they were focusing more on some players than others. So that kind of gets in there as well, and kind of try to talk about sort of the practices themselves and how they were formatted, and how that can change. And certainly when we go into fall camp and we get into games, it's going to be much different because there's just going to be a lot more live tackling.
There will be different formats. But I think overall, most of us at USCFootball.com, we're pretty optimistic at some of the changes that were made. You could see some differences in practice. You could see differences in scheme, things like that, obviously, especially on the offensive side of the ball. There were some visitors during spring practice. Have you any recruits that you've talked to that they've like, wow, I like the difference, or maybe that's something they don't notice, but has there been any kind of positive vibes coming from prospects who maybe came out to spring football and checked it out?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, mostly from the wide receivers. I think that's really where you're going to see the biggest positive reviews, and most of those guys that have been down there that have seen the team, they really like that they're passing the ball more. It's pretty obvious type stuff. You know, when you're talking to the kids, you're talking to Gary Bryant, who got down and got to see the team. LV Bunkley Shelton was another receiver that had just gotten a scholarship offer when he went and unofficially visited USC and really liked what he was seeing. You had other kids like Logan Loyal, though. Receiver out of St. John Bosco, who just transferred over from Orange Lutheran, really kind of the prototypical type of air raid type receiver who was, you know, a little more skeptical. I mean, he liked what he saw. He wanted to see how it was implemented and certainly how they were going to play in the game. It was one of those things where they liked the tempo. Those kids see a lot of their high school systems in what Graham Harrells is doing right now. They see a lot of the sort of simplistic go fast, really doing, you know, the same thing out of a lot of different looks. And so they relate to it, they can reference it, and they feel confident that they can come in and they can transition quickly because they understand that offense. And so that's a big thing for them. And I think that's, you know, obviously playing the big deal with Bryce Young, the five-star quarterback that got committed. He's a big recruiter for USC on the offensive side of the ball. So that's really where you've seen probably the most positive reviews of the team and what's going on. I think the offensive line class is still trying to figure out kind of how it all works. And, you know, offensive linemen, it's a little different. They like running the ball a little more. Obviously, the running backs like running the ball. On defense, still kind of questions that it's going to really be about what USC is able to do in terms of wins and losses and how successful the defense can be. You know, they've got some kids that they're really working hard on. Obviously, a guy like Justin Flo, who has a really good relationship with the coaching staff, but, you know, he's a national recruit. And so there's a lot of push for him from the South. He just kind of took a tour a while ago, looking at Georgia, Clemson, Alabama. I think USC's probably got the best shot of the teams in the West Coast, but they are battling with schools that are just winning, you know, so much that they're putting out so many NFL prospects. USC's just not anywhere in that league right now. You know, they're not in that conversation. So there's a lot of kids that I think just really want to have USC as an option. They want USC to win enough games and to have enough upward trajectory in terms of the program and where it's headed that they can seriously look at USC. And it was the same thing last year. You had guys like Chris Steele, and there was quite a few kids that ended up not going to USC that did want to go to USC. And USC just made it too hard on them. You know, there was just too much negativity. There was too many losses. There was too many questions about the future of the coaching staff. There was too much change. And then the university on top of it, there's a lot of scandal. There's a lot of controversy going on. It really almost made it impossible for some of those kids that had offers from the SEC and the Big Ten and all these other schools that are putting so much more investment into football than USC to really look at USC and consider them seriously. And that's going to be the same case in this recruiting class if USC can't, at the very least, win, you know, 9-10 games and be there where they're competing for a Pac-12 championship and they're ranked. If they can't do that, then these kids like Justin Flo just aren't going to really consider them.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned in that LV Bunkley Shelton, and I know you and Chris Trevino actually changed your crystal ball picks, and maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yes. Some people may have noticed that. It's interesting because Bunkley Shelton's a guy that's a real USC fan. He's one of those kids that you could kind of throw in there with the Brew McCoy type kids that just sort of think, you know, legacy. When he got his scholarship offer, he was blown away. It was a dream school. It's a school he's been looking at, you know, getting a scholarship offer for a very long time. He finally got that offer. But, you know, it's one of those things. I think there's it's really a two-way street here. Scholarship offers are sometimes meant to just get your foot in the door with a recruit. And sometimes they're meant to go out there and really try to sway a kid and really try to get a kid. And I think with Bunkley Shelton, there's still a little bit of USC evaluating him. And I think there's obviously a lot of receivers that they're recruiting and a lot of guys that they have interest from. I mean, this offense, it could recruit itself. You know, if they could spread the ball around and they can get receivers the ball and really show off of a pass-efficient offense and score points. And it's one of those questions that, you know, how much do they have to win on the offensive side of the ball in order to get some of these kids? This is a conversation I had with Greg Biggins a few weeks ago. We were kind of talking about some of these guys, and you had Josh Jackson, who committed to USC from Narbonne, 6'1", 180-pound wide receiver. And he's a three-star guy. He's a good player, a guy that a lot of the Pac-12 schools recruited, sort of a kind of does it everything receiver. He's a flanker. He's kind of kid that, you know, you could kind of use in any system. And I kind of asked Greg, I said, you know, a lot of these kids are really hyped up about the system. They're hyped up at the receiver position because USC's going to throw the ball a lot and they see the receivers being sort of featured. Whereas maybe with a pro style offense and, you know, Clay Helton coming out saying, you know, we want to be like Stanford, it kind of put the receivers off a bit. And they felt like, okay, they want to run the ball and they want to be more conservative. And you got to understand, kids, they just hear the highlights. They just hear the catchphrases. They just hear certain things. They're not really getting in depth like the fan base is as to what does that really mean? Does Stanford really, you know, what does Stanford do anymore? Do they really run the ball like they used to with Jim Harbaugh? Not really. They run out of the shotgun just as much as anybody. So, you know, that's just something that gets thrown out there. And the immediate thought is, oh, they want to get in the I formation and they run around jumbo sets. They're not going to throw the football. So now that you bring in the North Texas offense and more of the air raid, even though it's not as air raid-ish as I think anybody really expected. I guess that's a caveat that we can talk about with just watching spring football. There's a lot of three receiver sets, but they're still using the tight end. They flex him a lot, but it's not necessarily five receivers and the sort of run and shoot type air raid that you would see with Texas Tech or Mike Leach early on in his career. It's still, you know, personnel wise, they're not going crazy with five receivers all the time. But the receivers here air raid, so they like that thought. But just in terms of production, you know, if they are able to score a bunch of points, and maybe they don't win a lot of games, but they score a lot of points, I think that could still recruit itself to some extent. I think there's some kids out there that just want, for the sake of production and getting to the NFL, the ability to go to USC and to catch a bunch of balls. So there is some of that to kind of keep track of and kind of think about. But that was really the thing that I think conveyed overall, just talking to kids, you know, that were coming to practice. It was, hey, they're going to throw the ball. I'm a receiver and I want to catch the ball. So that's a match made in heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. You think, oh, I mean, I thought even like a guy like Trayvon Sidney might reconsider because of the type of offense and, you know, being a slot guy, he could, yeah, I thought he could excel. He's now announced he's going to Illinois, but for me, I mean, if you're a wide receiver, it's like, this is a good offense to be in.
And that's, you know, kind of what LV Bunkley Shelton kind of had said. And unfortunately though, I think, you know, he visited Ohio State and he's going and he's looking at some other schools. And if USC's not completely all in, I can see him kind of maybe jumping and going somewhere else. So, you know, he wants to make a decision probably before his senior year. We're going to see kind of how that shakes out. I think USC's still there, but I backed off a little bit on my prediction. I thought, yeah, he's going to go to USC for sure. But Chris has actually picked Ohio State, and I think that there's some validity to that. I think he's looking around a bit. And again, you know, even at a position where USC looks good in terms of the production that that position will have and the potential that you have in terms of the form for the NFL and the stage, and the kid is also a USC fan, grew up a USC fan, they're still going to have to fight with some of these kids, you know? And like I said, I think from their standpoint, Is he, you know, top of the rung? You've got some other guys like maybe Trayshawn Holden, who we're hearing now might be transferring to Narbonne. He's a four-star wide receiver that's committed to Alabama that actually played for the premium LA team in the Adidas National Championship passing tournament in Tampa, Florida. And so he hooked up with the LA guys, played for the LA team, hooked up with Bryce Young, and ended up winning the Adidas National Championship. The National Championship actually ended up having premium and Ground Zero, two California schools in the championship. And so you get a kid like that that hooks up, you know, ends up playing with the LA team, made some calls, kind of told some guys, look, I really like USC. I haven't heard anything from USC. I'm a city boy. I kind of would like to check out some schools, maybe on the West Coast, maybe check out LA. And now we're hearing that he might end up living out here. So all of a sudden that sort of thing happens and you kind of go, okay, yeah, that shifts the priorities at wide receiver now. So that's kind of one of those things that I think with the receiver position, obviously it's a position where you've got a good depth of talent. You've got a bunch of guys. I think, like I said, that two-way street, USC's got to really recruit those guys hard and want those guys. But at the same time, you know, those guys have to want to go to USC. And I think with Bunkley, I think there's a little bit of maybe hesitation on USC side, and they've offered and they like him, but are they going to push for him as hard as maybe some of these other schools, especially when you've got guys like Gary Bryant and some of these other kids that they're recruiting, and maybe even a guy like Trayshawn Holden who pops up all of a sudden on the radar as a guy that they may have a much better shot at than they would have ever thought of.
Few weeks ago, Gerard, if you go back a couple of the war rooms, I think, you know, it's been pretty clear that with the addition of Mike Jenks and Graham Harrell, that USC was going to recruit a little bit more in the state of Texas. We've now entered the May evaluation period. I thought maybe we'd get your comments on, you know, USC's coaches now, you know, being able to go out on the road and evaluate some of these kids as spring football gets started for high school, but also the push into Texas, and your thoughts on that.
Yeah, USC's, they've offered almost about two dozen kids from Texas at this point, and we kind of saw that coming. We knew that Mike Jenks specifically was an active recruiter, and when you lose T. Martin, you know, you don't really have a guy there that's probably going to pound on the table on the offensive side of the ball real hard for kids other than Mike Jenks. And when you've got Graham Harrell there too, or Harrell, I always mispronounce that guy's last name. It should be Harrell.
Harrell, that's weird.
It should be Harrell. I'm sorry. It should be pronounced that way. That's the way it's spelled, but Harrell. You've got, you know, a lot of guys familiar with Texas football, Texas high school football. Mike Jenks was a Texas high school football high school coach for a long time. So not just guys that, you know, oh yeah, they coached in Texas for a while, or they may have been originally from Texas, but guys that are originally from Texas and had done some high school work, they have some connections. They're going to use those connections. They're familiar. They're comfortable with Texas high school football. They're going to recruit their heart. Clay Helton, you know, spent a lot of time in Houston as well. And so, yeah, I think that's sort of an obvious thing that we saw coming, and it's come to fruition. USC is offering a bunch of guys in Texas, going after guys in Texas. Ultimately, the question is going to be, is it fruitful? Is it actually something that works? Texas is heavily recruited by a lot of schools, not just the cool schools in Texas, but schools outside of Texas, LSU, Oklahoma, Nebraska. You know, there's a lot of schools that go into Texas and try to get top kids. You have a little something there because Jenks could find some kids because he's got those high school connections and he's able to maybe go a little deeper. Certainly, because, you know, you're recruiting at a Texas Tech, and when he was at Texas Tech, you had to recruit some kids and really work to evaluate and find kids. You couldn't just swoop in there and go, okay, you're looking at the top 4-star guys, 5-star guys. You really had to find some kids. And so maybe they are able to pluck some kids out of there that maybe other schools are not as high on or figuring out. Dorian Hewitt is a kid that they got last year. Now, interestingly enough, it wasn't Jenks that was kind of the guy that really recruited him. It was, gosh, why am I blanking on his name? It's the new linebacker coach that was the special team coach, sort of analyst, and now he's the new outside linebacker coach. Why am I blanking on his freaking name? You're blanking on his name too?
Joe DeForest?
Tour de force. Yeah. God. Yeah, I was like, totally.
It's funny when someone blanks on something, if you just asked me, I would say it. But then when someone else is having it makes me struggle. I'm like, what?
Tour de force. Well, it's still weird. It's such an, I mean, we talked about this before, him being brought in his full time and you've got him there. And I was watching practice and, you know, Johnny Nansen and Chad Kalahaha are so, they were very vocal in that last practice. They were very, you know, involved, like it was intense. And it's funny because I hadn't gone to all the practices. I hadn't been to many practices this spring. We were restricted by USC in terms of how many people we could have at practice.
Yeah. That was a real problem. You know, there's too many media people from USC.
Too many people interested in USC football 5 and 7 right now. That, you know, we got to keep, we got to keep them at bay.
Why would you want to talk about this program that's having trouble selling tickets and stuff? Let's limit what we can do. That makes a whole lot of sense, you know.
So we had to kind of, you know, certain people could go, and other days people couldn't go, and et cetera, right? So I hadn't gone to, you know, all these practices. So I kind of was like, wow, you know, the practices that I was at, I thought, man, they should have been like this earlier on. Like, this should have been second practice, third practice. They should have had this intensity. They seemed like there was just really this acute intensity going on, and the attention to what was going on, and the instruction and the immediate instruction. And I don't know, it just seemed like it was important. And I kind of talked to Keeley about that, you know, before we did instant analysis. And I said, you know, I think the coaches were really intense, and I don't know, did I miss, you know, I didn't see all the practices. Were there practices where they just weren't this intense, or were they always like this? And she was like, no, I thought the exact same thing, like early in the practice. It's like, wow, they're really, you know, on it this practice. And it was like, yeah, why wait to the last practice? But the thing is, and watching those guys, I never even thought about Joe DeForest. He's also coaching linebackers too.
Well, the problem is he doesn't really have a position, because it's like they only have two linebackers now. Like the outside backers are more like defensive ends, sort of, you know. So it's a weird position for him, because it seems like they've de-emphasized that. Like, the Predator is not really there anymore.
It's very strange, the whole thing. It's just an odd thing that they did at the end, and it seemed like they didn't have another guy that they really could bring in. And Clay Helton, obviously, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree for him in terms of who he hires, and he likes to hire in-house. And, you know, Joe, like I was saying, Joe DeForest actually did a really good job on the recruiting trail. I mean, Britton Allen's another guy. That was his guy. He had some connection to IMG, some connection to Britton Allen. They recruited Britton Allen. He brought in Britton Allen. Dorian Hewitt is also evidently his guy, and from what I was told, was pretty much responsible for him. And a kid that, you know, 6'180" pound safety running high 10.5s, played for North Shore, which was one of the top teams in the nation, the top team in Texas last year. Like, okay. So, I mean, so there's an instance where you could say recruiting Texas, they did get a guy. Now, we don't know if Dorian Hewitt's going to end up being really good or not, but on paper, that was a pretty good get. I was like, okay, yeah, you needed guys. And at the end of the year there, you fire Ronnie Bradford, your DB board is just a joke. You're scrambling. You got to find some bodies. And they got some pretty good guys. I mean, Britton Allen's looking like he's going to be a player. He looked like he was going to be a player on film, and, you know, three-star guy, but comes in and he looks like he's going to be a guy that can definitely contribute for him, maybe even as a true freshman. And Dorian Hewitt kind of looks like that guy. Now, he's not on campus yet. He's not going to be in campus until the summer. But, you know, like I said, on paper, that's a pretty good get. And they went into Texas and they got a guy that, you know, the Texas schools weren't really highly pushing for him. And you don't really know the whole story behind all that, but that's kind of where they're at in terms of trying to get some guys. You know, you're trying to get the guys that maybe the Texas schools are not hard after, you know, maybe Oklahoma is not that hard after, and you're able to maybe get some guys under the radar, but it's tough to build a strategy on that. You know, that's what you're going to do. I mean, maybe if USC wins a bunch of games and you can get into that college football playoff and you're up at that level, then maybe you can recruit some of the higher ranked guys. But again, it's crowded in Texas. There's a lot of schools trying to come into Texas. You know, USC, I think, definitely first and foremost has to do a good job with California kids. Because like I said, hey, Ground Zero, Premium, both in the 7-on-7 national championship to California schools. And I know Premium had some kids like Trayshawn Holden, who's out of Baltimore. They had a couple kids. They had Corey Moore playing for them, too, that weren't California kids. But they, you know, they're good. They did most of it with California kids. And I think the thought that USC has to go into Texas or they have to go down south in order to win games or to be elite is just not true. It's not a necessity. It's a luxury. I think Pete Carroll, they went and they picked some kids here and there. You go in, you get a Brian Cushing here. You get, you know, a Dwayne Jarrett there. You get, you know, Mike Williams. You go and you try to get some guys. But I don't know if it's, you know, hey, we need to offer, you know, 30 guys from one state and hopefully get like 5 or 6. Because if it's a state like Texas, you're getting 5 or 6 guys, and it's probably going to have to be a bunch of under-the-radar guys, which is to say perhaps you're going to miss on some dudes just because. And so that makes it difficult. And, again, you're kind of sort of ignoring the home talent, which is another issue because that becomes a snowball effect in and of itself.
Yeah, I saw that with Tim DeRuiter when he came to Fresno State. They were still recruiting Texas really hard instead of the Central Valley, and most of his staff came from Texas. And man, there's a ton of talent in the Central Valley. And, you know, obviously Clay Helton's recruited that before, but you can't ignore your home, especially when the grounds are so fertile like they are. And you know, you mentioned it, like if USC goes in 10-2, getting those guys out of Texas is going to be a lot easier. But if it's a 7-5 or something, like you're probably going to lose. Well, you might get fired, but you're probably going to lose on the recruiting trail as well, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you can be damned if you do, damned if you don't a little bit. And like I said, the snowball effect is that you start, even if you do recruit Texas and you are successful, let's say you go 10-2 and you get, you know, 5 guys from Texas, you know, the California kids start to look at that and go, oh, okay, so we're not good enough anymore. You know, you sort of have to walk that line a little bit with that, because, you know, eventually you're going to have to recruit locally. You have to recruit locally. I mean, we're talking about, yeah, recruiting other states, but you, no matter what, you're going to have a majority of your roster is going to be from California. That would be completely asinine if you didn't do that. but the problem is that, you know, those guys that don't go for whatever reason, you're probably also playing against. And that's something that's already brought up, that, you know, those guys that you're missing on are going to Oregon, they're going to Utah, they're going to Washington, they may go to UCLA. You're going to play against those kids also. So you're not only not getting that talent, but you're having to play against it. And it's sort of, you're killing yourself twice over, basically.
Yeah. You know, talking to local talent, we talked off air beforehand. Seems like USC shifting, I guess, the local camps that they do. We've seen some changes, you know, certainly from the Pete Carroll era on, when new staffs come in, camps change a little bit, just the nature of them. And, you know, you got 5 new assistant coaches on the staff. How have you seen the camps for USC, how they've changed, and what are you expecting from them this summer?
Well, the one big thing is that they're going to have an offensive line and defensive line camp this year. And they didn't last year. And that was the first time in a long time that they didn't have an actual just offensive line, defensive line camp. And certainly last year was a bad year for them recruiting offensive linemen. I mean, that was a swing and a miss. And I don't know whose decision it was to not have an offensive line camp and a defensive line camp. But obviously when you make it just about those guys, you're able to get some players just on campus, really. I mean, maybe it's just an excuse. Guys don't even perform, but hey, we're having an offensive line, defensive line camp. And, you know, the offensive linemen are just interested in that. So they come down, whether it be Jonathan Au or Sean Ryan or whoever it is, they just get on campus and check it out. They didn't get Sean Ryan on campus very much at all. And that was kind of a big swing and a miss. And when Neil Callaway was fired, and it was, you know, we talked about this, and not to rehash the whole story about how he kind of liked Neil Callaway because Neil Callaway never called him. He didn't like the recruiting process, and Neil Callaway just was a guy that just didn't really call him that much and wasn't really on him real hard. And then when Tim Drevno took over, Tim Drevno was just a more aggressive recruiter and was calling him and doing the things that, you know, you would expect really out of a recruiter. And Sean Ryan kind of didn't like it as much. And so he kind of started going towards more UCLA and ended up taking an unofficial visit there. And he did camp there. Sean Ryan did camp at UCLA. And so, you know, camps are pretty big. They're usually not as big for the local players as they are if you can get a kid from out of state. But I think that experience and them whiffing on so many offensive linemen last year locally, I think probably hammered home the point. We need to have an offensive line, defensive line camp. And even if it's not the top guys that are showing up, you still have to have it. And maybe you can just get them on campus and have them there and just get some face time with them. And it's an excuse to. And so, yeah, they're having an offensive line, defensive line camp. They'll have their elite camps again. Don't know when those are exactly yet. And they'll have a Rising Stars camp, which will be an AM session, PM session. So it'll be one long camp. And that kind of hasn't really, it's not the camp it used to be. Rising Stars camp used to be one of the greatest events nationally. I mean, it was like Friday Night Lights in Florida and Rising Stars at USC was where you would have, you know, before there was the opening finals, was kind of one of the best camps for just national talent. Now it's just kind of, you know, all the kids that want to sign up and pay to go, they go. And it's really none of the top players. I think one of the years, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, where they had like 2,000 kids or something show up for it. It was just crazy. It was just like, wow. I mean, you couldn't evaluate those kids if you really wanted to, because there's just too many guys there. You know, not enough guys that could get reps to really know and see what's going on. So they're just going to have the one Rising Stars camp. It's going to be AM, PM. So we'll see how that goes. It'll probably be a lot of kids again. And so we kind of would look forward more to the elite camps where you get like, you know, 60 kids, something like that. And it's more of a practice and you get to see better players, but you also get to see more reps. You know, you get to see what they're really about and they go through a practice environment and it's more competitive. And so it's a better thing. I wish more of these events and camps that we do were less and more exclusive. You get a lot of, even 7-on-7 nowadays, you get, you know, there's 20 teams, 30 teams, 40 teams. I mean, some of this stuff, like you go to Vegas, which we don't even cover anymore because it's such a shit show, excuse my language. You got 200 teams there. It's a mess. It's a bunch of people just running around every which way. And, you know, you really need to see specific things from people to have a really educated ability to evaluate and what a prospect can do. And so even the Nike camps anymore, which aren't Nike camps, the opening, which is not Nike at all anymore. It doesn't have anything to do with Nike these days. It's a lot of kids going there. You get like 500 kids at the Southern California opening regional. And it's, you know, there's just sometimes you just don't get to see some guys, you know, they just don't go a bunch. And it's like, man, that's a kid I really want to see more of. We do like the Under Armour camp nowadays because the Under Armour camp caps at about 150 kids. And that's a pretty good number. 100 to 150 kids tends to be a pretty good number. And you get to just watch and see who you need to see and really get, you know, a vibe for what their game is about and the competitive one-on-one moments, which are, you know, super important. Everybody wants to see. You get to see a good amount of that. So, you know, with the USC camp, it's going to be the same thing. They'll have 2 7-on-7 passing tournaments. Everybody loves 7-on-7. Let's just do more 7-on-7. That is, again, sort of like with the offensive line defensive camp. That's more about getting the 7-on-7 handlers down there, get the coaches down there, get the people that have some influence with some of those kids in the off season. You know, you get those teams down there and then you get, you know, the kids down there and it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with camps and events anymore. It's, you got to get a coach or somebody that's close to the kid to get the kid down there. You know, it used to be you call the kid and you call his parents and then they bring him down there. Now you got to get the coach or the trainer or the handler or whoever it is involved, and it all depends on what 7-on-7 team you're talking about, to get down there and to, you know, be able to get on campus, and then you get the kids on campus and you're able to recruit them. So that's kind of sort of a lot about what it is these days, and that's the sort of the shaking and moving that you got to do to be able to get in the kids' ear during the summer, because, you know, you've got a lot of different schools saying a lot of different things, a lot of people trying to recruit these kids.
One more topic before we jump into the questions that we got. Looking at the scholarship math, there's a few names out there, Gerard, that USC could potentially add to still be part of 2019. There's the running back, Taj Griffin, who's from Powder Springs, Georgia, but is going to transfer from Oregon. There's Tennessee offensive tackle Drew Richmond. We've talked about him in the war room a bunch. And then there's Elias Ricks from Modern Day, who could reclassify a la JT Daniels and come in early. The corner, five-star corner. I think he's five-star, right? Four-star cornerback.
Yep,
I believe so. Looking at the number, I wanted to get your thoughts on those guys, but looking at the numbers, I believe USC only has one spot left. Because if just the freshmen coming in, there's 25, including John Jackson III, because you know he gray shirted before, and then Ben Griffiths, who the punter, he's a redshirt freshman, but he came in that class. But you also have Jalen Watson and Nick Figueroa. And I still believe that Brew McCoy took one of the spots from 2018, one of the early spots, and you won't get that back. So my understanding, you know, it seems like it. That's 28 people. You can sign 25, and I believe USC had four that they could sign from the previous class. So I think there's one left. I don't know if that's what you think, and then. If you think one of those three guys would potentially be coming to USC.
As far as those initials for that 2019 class, they do have one left. How that stacks up with a transfer that could come in is harder to say, because I don't know when, say for Drew Richmond specifically, if he would count towards another class or he would have to count towards the 19 class. I would assume it's the 19 class, but we know things can be worked a little bit. And Ben Griffiths himself, I mean, he's an interesting case because he is a transfer. He's actually not a part of the recruiting class per se. He was not announced because of that, because he was actually from Victoria, Australia, and he was going to a college there, I think, and then he's actually looked at as a transfer. But asking, you know, around and seeing what's going on, from what I'm understanding, they do have that one initial for the 2019 class. I don't know if you could change around the initial and what it counts towards with a guy like Drew Richmond or maybe a Taj Griffin. Maybe that changes in terms of the 85 cap. And if somebody was to leave or there's another transfer or what have you, in terms of how much room they have there, that might be different. So, I mean, with Elias Ricks, for sure, that's going to count against 2019. So that's one of those things. And I was talking to Chris Trevino about it, and I said, wouldn't it be really ironic? They went and they made that last minute push to grab all those guys at the end of the year, which are a bunch of three-star guys, which, you know, people were kind of looking around going, oh, are we going to, like, are they just grabbing guys to grab guys, or are they grabbing good players? And you wouldn't have enough room for a guy like Elias Ricks. That would have been pretty bad. But like I said, from what I understand, for sure they have one that opens up that initial 2019 if Elias Ricks was to reclassify for the 2019 class. And that's what he would count towards, is the 2019 class. Because you also have to think of, you know, the other guys that, you know, reclassified, you know, JT Daniels. Could he be shifted around a little bit because of, you know, how he reclassified and when he actually enrolled, et cetera, et cetera? There's a lot of questions with that too. But from what I understand, there is one for that 2019 class. That's the one thing I know pretty much for sure, that they have one ride for 2019 still left.
And I think Chris Trevino put up a poll, and it wasn't really much of a poll. Like, if you had to choose between those three, you take Elias Ricks all day long, right? I mean, that's the one you want.
Oh, see, I don't know if it's that cut and dry.
Okay.
Obviously,
I mean, it was pretty skewed on the, I think it was like 90% on the poll or something that picked Ricks, but.
You know, and I can see it. I understand. I mean, defensive back is an issue for them right now. And the thought process for most is that there's a five-star defensive back that could come in and play right away for USC. Yes, please. But, you know, he's a freshman, and as good as he is, you know, he's a freshman. And freshman cornerbacks struggle, just like freshman quarterbacks struggle. And we saw JT Daniels come in. He had his struggles. you look at a guy like Drew Richmond, right tackle. Who does USC have at right tackle right now? Who's their starter supposed to be?
Like Jalen McKenzie, you mean, or?
I mean, left tackle, you feel a little more confident because you got Austin Jackson there, and we're still waiting to see if Austin Jackson can be that franchise-type left tackle. But he's a guy that's got some starting ability. We know he's got a lot of talent, okay? We know he's got a lot of talent. This is a guy that was on the 100x4 relay team, for his high school team at 300 pounds. So we know he's got a lot of talent, a lot of athletic ability. We don't see that so much at right tackle. And so you're only going to get Drew Richmond for a year, but he's going to be able to come in and play right away. I mean, if I had to make a choice, I probably would say Ricks as well. But I don't know that it's a complete slam dunk because that offensive line does not impress me right now. I'm still very curious to see how that offensive line plays. You know, Clay Helton was super enthusiastic about how they played and thought that they were amazing and they blew people off the ball and they were physical.
Yeah, that was
and
weird.
I was looking around.
That was strange.
Thinking, they didn't see those practices. I mean, again, I wasn't at every practice, but I was at this one and I didn't see them in 9-on-9 blowing anybody off the ball. If they had 3 yards collectively of that whole period, I would have been surprised. So I don't know. I don't know that that's a team that's going to be able to run the ball real successfully, and there's still question marks even with how they're going to pass protect. Now, is that a matter of the scheme and trying to, you know, understand the scheme and making sure everything's working, and that's just a matter of more practice, or is it just they need to interject some talent? You know, it's not a deep group. It is a team. It is a group that you feel like there is some talent there, you know, at the top. They're just not necessarily playing to that level. So, you know, is Drew Richmond really going to do a whole lot? Is he going to make that huge impact? I don't know. But this is a guy that was highly sought after in high school. He was one of the top players in the region and a guy that a lot of people wanted. And he went to Tennessee and he started at Tennessee. He played at Tennessee, both left tackle and right tackle. Biggest question I actually have, and he's going to actually officially visit NC State this weekend, by the way, just FYI for everybody. He's visited Florida State. Now he's going to go to NC State. We're expecting him to make a decision here towards the end of the month. You know, does he want to play right tackle is a question, because he got moved a little bit, kind of got to get demoted at Tennessee from left tackle to right tackle. And then he transferred at USC. Again, it's going to be right tackle. That's really where they need him. That's where he would play. So, you know, if that's an issue, if that's a question mark for him, then USC's probably not in the best spot. But if he wants to continue to play right tackle, then, you know, USC, I think, has got pretty good spot for him to compete at. And so they could use him. They could use him. They could use Taj Griffin, and they could use Elias. They can use all those guys. They need to figure out a way to get all those guys, because, quite frankly, they don't have a ton of running backs either. And, you know, Marquis Stepp, and earned the top performer spot for us. I think he was like 4 or 5 on the list, and he played well, but he's a guy that's got to stay healthy. That was his biggest issue in high school. He talked to Steve Wilfong, said, you know, we liked him. He's a good player, but he's never healthy. And so, you know, if he can stay healthy, he's a really good player. Same thing with, you know, obviously Stephen Carr. If he can come back completely from that back surgery, which he didn't look like he did last year, he's a guy. He's a guy for sure. And Vi, you know, we've seen him play well and do some things here and there. Just haven't maybe seen enough of him. You know, I think Malapaya has been a guy that in practice we've liked and in flashes in games we've liked. But, you know, just haven't maybe seen enough. But, you know, there's not a whole lot more going on than those guys. And so, yeah, they're going to pass the ball more. But, you know, you get an injury or two and you can't run the ball anymore. You know, you're basically going to have to pass the ball. You better get those 5 receivers out there, because you're going to have 1 scholarship running back or 2 that are going to be capable of running the ball the whole year.
All right. Well, let's jump into some questions we got from the people over the last several weeks. So I think they're most of them are up to date, but you know, there might be some that have been a little longer, but this one was interesting from Don. He sent this in a few weeks ago. Would Greg Biggins or Gerard Martinez be good recruiting coordinators, or would that position be a downgrade compared to their current positions? What do you think, Gerard?
That's a funny question.
I don't know necessarily just USC in general, but just like in general, like would you be?
I can't speak for Greg, obviously. a downgrade. I wouldn't want to be a recruiting coordinator for college. I just think that Eric Ziskin left, and you know, he left mainly because of the time constraints and just how much little free time you have and personal time you have. You're always on campus. If you're at USC, obviously you're working, you know, crazy hours just because you've got, you know, four guys or whatever that are working in the support staff, which is ridiculous, but you know, they're trying to improve that. I just would have really no interest in it. I don't think, I'm a writer. I went to college to be a writer. I actually have a degree in journalism. So while, you know, I cover the recruiting process and I know a lot about the recruiting process, I never looked to be an administrator or a coach or anything that kind of sort of ends up resulting in becoming a recruiting coordinator. Recruiting coordinators nowadays, like I said before, it's really a job that falls mostly in the support staff. The full-time coaches get that moniker. Johnny Nansen is USC's recruiting coordinator, but I mean, a lot of it fell to Ziskin and Gavin Morris and now Trey Johnson. The full-time coaches got a lot on their plate. And so it's really just sort of a title that you get to get a little more money. But the recruiting coordinator job that was 20 years ago is now falling mostly on the support staff. And it's a tedious, long job of scouting and a lot of hours. And, it would be just something that I wouldn't really be interested in. And certainly from a creative standpoint, and as a writer and as just a web designer and the stuff that we do, it wouldn't fulfill any of that stuff, obviously. And like I said, I can't speak for Greg, but I don't think Greg is signing up to be a recruiting coordinator either. And it's easy, you know, I mean, and you gotta tell it like it is. We're armchair quarterbacking a lot of this stuff, you know, when we talk about recruiting. And, you know, maybe I sound like a smart guy and I have all the answers sometimes, but, you know, I don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes, and maybe there's context to certain things. You just try to make rational, logical explanations to how things are and what you know of them. But it doesn't mean that, you know, we have a monopoly on knowledge when it comes to recruiting. So, would it be a downgrade? Would it be more money? Probably. I think it would be more money. I think that, most schools, for even from a support staff standpoint, anybody who's handling a lot of the recruiting, it's important. They know it's important, and they're paying that guy a lot of money. They're paying him pretty good money. But in terms of the job itself, I don't think it would be something that I would want to do and I would be necessarily passionate about. It'd be pretty much a grind and a lot of sorting and organizing and doing things, and probably live in a spreadsheet, I would have to think, just trying to get everybody's itinerary all figured out.
Yeah, that would be it's not an easy job for sure. Let's see. We got next question. We had a couple from Tarek with a Q. What is your assessment of Saval Smalls and Darnell Washington, and what is USC's interest in these players and vice versa?
Oh, well, they're both really good athletes, physical athletes. Saval Smalls is interesting. Saval Smalls, when we saw him, he was just coming out of his freshman year, and he was about 235, almost 240. And I looked at him, and I go, this guy's going to be playing with his hand on the ground. He has not really gained any weight. He's no bigger. He's almost the exact same player physically, which, you know, has positives and negatives. You do a question, okay, he's not really a bigger guy. I mean, he's leaned out probably a little bit even. But physically kind of very similar to the player we saw a couple years ago. Still five-star, still a guy that, you know, looks good. There's some talk. There's a couple of, I won't name names because I don't want it to come back and haunt anybody, because I think it would. Some folks up in the Northwest who are kind of saying that they'd take Saval Smalls over Justin Flo. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. I saw Saval Smalls a couple times here. And this offseason and Adidas and 7-on-7 playing some middle linebacker and, you know, good player. I think he's probably better on the outside. He'd be more of a predator for USC, but not quite Justin Flo. I take Justin Flo every day, all day, twice on Sundays, and he probably will play on Sunday, so I'd be taking him then on my fantasy team. So, yeah, but Saval Smalls, good player. Not looking at USC. He's put out, a top 12 or a final 12 a couple months ago. USC not on it, really not involved. They'd take him. They'd be interested in recruiting him. They did offer him a scholarship, And they'll probably try to stay, you know, in the conversation a little bit. I'm sure Johnny Nansen will be up to go see him and just, you know, to be around, because you never know. They could win a Rose Bowl or something, and maybe they could get back into it with him. But as of right now, he's eliminated him basically from consideration. With Darnell Washington, he's still looking at USC, wants to play tight end, a guy that we have rated as an athlete, which is, I guess, to suggest that he could play some defensive end. Kind of a freak athlete. I mean, he's a huge, huge guy. He is a power forward, basically playing football. I mean, he's got that length. He's got that size. He's a good, legit 6'6", 6'7". Definitely an elite player. Has USC, like I said, in consideration. Not probably going to end up at USC. We'll see again what happens. These are national guys. These are five-star level guys. And, you know, it's in years past, you could say with some authority as to, okay, these are the guys at USC is probably going to end up with. This is probably what the core class is going to look like. These are the top players regionally, and they're going to get those guys. But when you have a Brew McCoy go to USC for 2 weeks and then transfer out and go to Texas, we're in the twilight zone, okay? You know, we have a picture of a black hole now. We see that it's actually the transfer portal, and that is where some of the top players are going if you're USC. And there's nothing can escape that if you're going to only win five games. So, you seem like I tied all that in there?
Nice.
See, relevant here. We're talking about, you know, astronomy and recruiting and everything altogether. But that's sort of where those things sit. I wouldn't bet right now that either of those players end up at USC. But like I said, if you win enough games and there's enough, you know, hype and things, and you know, hey, maybe they don't win enough games. Maybe people get fired and they clean house and they bring in Urban Meyer. Then, you know, that's going to totally change everything as well. I mean, you bring in a guy like that, you bring in and I don't want to get into, you know, we're going to talk about these hypotheticals with Urban Meyer. I mean, that would get the podcast going more than anything. Like, I know that if we do that and it's, you know, Gerard Martinez talks Urban Meyer recruiting podcast, I guarantee you that clickbait will get people on the podcast. We're not going to do that, but I can tell you that would be money. That would be printing money because we make so much of it on the podcast, the free podcast. Is this going to be premium or is this going to be
premium? We're doing a premium again.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But if you make a move like that as well, obviously that would change some things. And, you know, you're going to lose some guys because you're going to bring in a new coaching staff and they don't have relationships built. But then you're also going to gain a bunch of kids because they're going to say, Urban Meyer, that's a national championship. I want to be a part of that, you know, or maybe, you know, there's a few other coaches that you could mention in that, that same breath that might gain that type of momentum and traction on the recruiting trail. And then guys like Darnell Washington or, Savell Smalls, you know, are taking another look at USC.
All right. Let's see. Next question, from Tarek. How high is USC on Aiden Hector? As a pure corner, he's one of the best I've seen, regardless of ranking. And he's a USC legacy, Gerard. I've seen him a few times up from Washington.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty high on USC, and USC's pretty high on him. And he's really one of the few guys that, you know, they're going to be in it with him regardless. You know, I think at the end of the day, whether he decides to wait it out and commit later or maybe commits earlier, I think they're going to have an angle with him and an in with him. And so if one of the few, you know, highly ranked guys that you can kind of say that about, there's a couple other guys that they're recruiting, and certainly with the cornerback position, we talked about Elias Ricks and what, you know, is going to transpire there. That's completely up in the air still. You know, we don't know A, if he's going to be able to reclassify, B, if USC is going to be there, because LSU obviously is going to try to work some things out to make sure that they could get him in that 2019 class. And don't you think that LSU isn't going to try as hard as they can to make sure that if he does reclassify and wants to play, that they're going to have a spot open. They're going to make Coach O is going to make sure, he's going to try to do whatever he can to make sure that they could try to bring him in. So we'll see how that all shakes out. But Yeah, I mean, you've got a few guys that are in that breadth, but really, you know, Aiden Hector is one of the few top rated dudes that, you know, I mean, you're talking about like top 10, top 20 cornerbacks, four star guy. You know, Darian Green-Warren is another guy that was committed to Oklahoma that USC is looking at, and he's got that relationship with Chris Hawkins because he plays in Ground Zero, which Armon Hawkins runs Ground Zero, so that's helping USC quite a bit. The fact that USC really didn't recruit any top corners last year, we talked about the run that they made with defensive backs towards the end of the year, but, you know, not really a lot of high-quality guys in terms of reputation or anybody that's going to scare away a guy that's a four-star guy, you know, ranked, you know, 14th, 15th nationally from modern day. You know, he's definitely, I think, leaning towards USC. You know, Keely Ringo, that's another top guy that, you know, if in another year where USC's, you know, playing for a national championship or they're in that top 10 year in and year out, you know, Keely Ringo is a guy that for sure is going to end up being USC's probably in his top three, but right now USC's kind of on the outside looking in. You got Texas, you got Ohio State, you got Georgia, you got all these schools that are all being talked about with more buzz than USC is. And so, you know, that's kind of one of those things where, you know, the Aiden Hector is one of the few guys that you can see that, you know, outside the state and certainly just in that group of top guys that USC, I think, is going to have a good shot at kind of throughout, and we'll just kind of see how it goes with the season and everything. But I think they're going to be in there, like I said, regardless of whether he commits early. He could commit early. He could commit to Oregon or somewhere else. You know, you always have to kind of put that out there, too, because it's the early recruiting process, but it doesn't mean a whole lot. For most kids, those commitments are just, let me get my foot in the door in case I get hurt my senior year, and then I know I have a place. You know, I have a scholarship and I have a place to go to. And then when they don't get hurt, it comes November, they go, okay, now it's time to take my official visits and look at other schools.
Nice. We also, I guess, a similar question from Clark. He said, what is Keely Ringo?
Clark Phillips.
I'm sorry?
Clark Phillips?
That's just a
recruiting joke.
No, it's not Clark Phillips. He wanted to know about Aiden Hector's interest in USC. You talked about that. But also Keely Ringo, he said, obviously they would be tough pulls if we had another terrible season. But with a good season or a big-name coach coming in, would USC be in a good spot for them?
I think with Ringo, it would have to be almost another coach coming in. I don't think he's going to be a guy that they're going to be able to pull with this staff. And even if they won 10, 11 games, I mean, they win a national championship, then you go, okay, you know, that's, you know, then that's hard to say how that would impact a guy like that. But I think if you're saying, okay, USC could get back to 9-10 wins and Clay Helton keeps his job. Now, obviously the whole thing about this 9-10 win thing is how does that 9 or 10 wins sort itself out? You know, I mean, that's the conversation that we all kind of have to have and kind of think about. Can they start out, you know, 1-3 and still, you know, keep him around throughout the whole season and then he ends up pulling it together and they win 10 games? Or is it like, you know, you can't make it past that and there's no chance to get to 10 wins? There's no, you know, the USC would fire him midseason. I don't know. There's a lot of people that feel like they're not going to fire him during the year, like regardless, it's just not going to happen. And I understand where that thinking comes from because I kind of predicted the administration wasn't going to have any interest in firing him last season when everybody else was saying he was gone. So I do think there are definitely proponents in the administration. Keep Clay Helton, keep him, keep him, keep him, keep him. We can't go through another season with an interim coach, yada, 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 rationale. Here's our agenda. But then there's also the thought of, can you really keep him? I mean, when last year was such a debacle and you had people, you know, paying for planes to fly around with fire Clay Helton and everything, and there's so much heat already on Lynn Swann as well. You know, can you lose a bunch of games at the beginning of the season? Because if they're going to lose games, it's probably going to happen at the beginning of the season. I mean, that's the opening to the season is not easy, and if the team's not good and they're not prepared – that's probably where they're going to end up faltering. So do you just say, hey, you know what, we're giving Graham Harrell the reins and we're going to get it to him midseason. We can't prolong this. Or do you try to, you know, double down and say, you know what, regardless of what happens in the beginning of the season, regardless of what happens in the middle of the season, he's going to be the coach until the end of the season. And that's how we're going to do it. And then maybe he can, you know, there is that possibility, like you have that 2016 season where they could start out slow and then, you know, could redeem himself. And then 10 wins, you start to review the whole season and say, okay, what goes on? But for a guy like Kelee Ringo, I don't think that's going to get it done. I think you got to really win big and like really big and shock everybody and go out there and win like, you know, 11, 12 games. And like you're maybe playing for a college football championship, or yeah, you bring in just another coach and then, you know, the whole sort of vibe for the program and the direction of the program changes completely. And it's not any coach. It's got to be the right coach, but the, you know, if you bring in a guy that's got that name and the feel of things and he just hits it off with those coaches and wants to look at USC again, then yeah, there's a possibility that he could end up in the fray. Like I said, way different circumstances than Aiden Hector, who I think, yeah, USC can win 10 games, and yeah, I think they can get Aiden Hector. Or with a new coach, I think they can get in. I think they'll be in that conversation kind of regardless at the end. Well, they get him or not, you know, that's a different story, but they'll be in that conversation, I think, regardless.
All right. We got one last question from Tony. So just over an hour, not too bad for first time back in a while. He said, knowing that USC's ability to recruit 5- and 4-star recruits will depend on a successful season, 10 wins plus moving forward, do both of you believe at least a 10-win season is highly likely for this team? Looking at the previous 3 recruiting cycles before this last one, it should be a matter of developing players and creating a culture that holds these players accountable, then recruiting talent onto the current roster. In other words, USC isn't going to turn into Oregon State next year unless this trend continues of not recruiting moving forward, LOL. USC still has the opportunity to change things around, but this comes down to Clay Helton's ability to change the current culture on the team and his coach's ability to develop players. 2019 seems to be a, quote, show me season, or Clay is out. That's from Tony.
So I guess the ultimate question there through all that is, do we think USC can win 10 games next year?
Yeah.
In order to put together a recruiting class which meets the expectations of, you know, what everybody has seen from USC in past years. Well, that's a prediction. What do you think USC's record is going to be next year? I don't really have a solid opinion on that yet. Obviously, I want to see what happens in fall camp. From spring, 10 wins, man, you know, where do they get them? That's the thing. Where do you get them when you got at Washington, you got Stanford, you got at Notre Dame, you got Oregon coming in, you're at Arizona State. You know, it's tough to look and find those 10 wins because you still have 5-7 in your mind. You know, you still have that just sitting there like, this is that team, you know, that couldn't – they almost got blown up by Arizona State. We forget that, but they should have beat Arizona State, but then in that first half they were getting shellacked by Arizona State. So what does Arizona State bring to the table? I mean, they bring to the table probably a freshman quarterback, or at least a guy that's not experienced. But the problem is, you know, that's later in the year. So you're not going to get that real freshman. You know, if you were to play them when you played Stanford or you play Utah earlier in the year, you know, you're getting a guy that's green. It's a little later in the year. So I don't know what Arizona State's going to be like when you're playing there. You know, Oregon, I'm not sold on Oregon. I'm not sold really on the coaching. But I think they got a quarterback that's, you know, experienced, and that goes a long ways, especially in the Pac-12, when you've got some experience there behind the quarterback and you've got a good offensive line coming back. At Washington, you figure it's a loss. You know, I maybe in the beginning of the season, it's really how they play against Stanford and then going to BYU, that sort of turnaround. Because, you know, Stanford sort of seems to set the tone a lot for USC a bit. And so you kind of see where USC is and how good they're willing to play, because it seems like, you know, ever since Stanford sort of put that run against them, now they, you know, the team gets ready for Stanford. Now, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing to talk about, oh, well, they get up for Stanford. Well, that's to say that they don't get up for other teams. And that's one of the issues that Clay Helton has definitely had, you know, with this group, is having them play consistently good all the time. And it took them sort of that 1-3 and everybody basically saying, well, you're dog shit. You're terrible. Your team's crap. You guys are done. He's done. And then everybody was like, okay, there's no expectation. So let's just go out there and play hard and show people that we're not as bad as we were against Alabama. And that's when they kind of focused and they went on that big run. But, you know, when they have the expectations of how good they could be, then, you know, they don't play so well. So, you know, coming from 5-7, maybe they shock everybody. Maybe they come out and they beat Stanford and they're able to go to BYU and they were able to play a good game on the road, and which will probably be still a hostile environment. You know, even that beginning of the year, third game of the year, BYU will still be, you know, pretty good. They'll still have some hopes as to, you know, their bowls and whatever. I mean, we don't know what the team's going to be like at the end of the year. BYU is always like, you know, with quarterbacks and injuries, they don't have much depth, but you're playing them early. So you're going to get a pretty good BYU team, and then you got Utah. So I don't know. I mean, it's really a matter of where do you find those 10 wins? That's the hardest thing. I can see where there'll be losses, but it's more of, you know, who do you beat? Do you beat Arizona State on the road? You beat Oregon at home? You know, can you beat Utah at home? You know, they've been pretty good against Utah at home. Playing at Utah, yeah, they're not very good, but playing at home against Utah, they've been pretty good. So, I mean, I feel more like it's an 8-9 win season, actually. And I think that's what makes it hard, and that's what's the biggest question marks is. Two questions are, first, do they stick with Helton throughout the season no matter what? Or is there enough pressure that they have to fire him if there's not a good start to the season? Two, how does the team, you know, really get better during the season, and are they able to develop if they are able to keep with the coach and they are, you know, that team? Or do you see Grant Harrell's the guy that's going to be, you know, the interim coach, and it becomes all about them?
Yeah, I agree. I think USC is probably in the 8 or 9 win window, which is, you know, 3 or 4 win improvement over last year. It's going to be a more efficient and exciting offense. They're going to score more points, but I don't think they fixed all the problems. I think to get to 10 wins, a lot of stuff kind of has to fall in place, especially with that early schedule. And you have to avoid really well-coached teams like Fresno State, you know, that's right out of the gate, you know, and they're going to have 20,000 fans in there. That's a stub your toe potential game. So, I mean, you lose a game like that, you're not getting the 10 wins, obviously. I mean, that would take some kind of tremendous turnaround, but there's a lot of roadblocks, potholes in this schedule. And we've seen USC kind of make a bunch of mistakes before. They fix some things, certainly, but is it enough to get you to that next level? They're talented enough. I mean, they're still the most talented team in the Pac-12, in my opinion. So they can, but will they? It's just a big ask. It's a big jump to go from where they were last year to double it up to 10 wins. And like Gerard said, it's really hard to find where all those wins would come from.
Yeah, it's do they keep Clay Helton regardless throughout the whole season? And if they do, is 8 or 9 wins enough? You know, I guess that would really be the two big questions that I have. You know, does that still do it enough? I have this inkling that it would be enough. 8-9 wins would certainly be enough for the administration. I think they love Clay Helton. They want to keep him. But is it enough that, you know, there may be pressure from the outside, from alumni and fans on the board of trustees, if, you know, that wouldn't be something that, you know, there would be a push there. Because I know it wouldn't be enough for most of the fan base. And I know a lot of the alumni would not feel like 8 or 9 wins is enough. And, you know, whether that's fair or not, I think that's going to be how it gets cut. And, yeah, there's some games there that you just wonder, you know. You want to say, you know, this is going to be a real focused USC team. It's going to be a different USC team because of how they played last year. And there's going to be people that will doubt them. And that's, you know, when they play their best. But that hasn't always worked out because a lot of people doubted him against Alabama. I mean, that's when they played against Alabama, I remember having a conversation with Keith Hayward, who had just been fired by USC, and we were kind of, he was at Louisville, and we were kind of talking about it, and he goes, dude, he goes, they're going to get annihilated by Alabama. Are you kidding me? And I was like, nah, Keith, you don't know, man. You know, one year you guys, I think you know, it's a little bit because, you know, you're not at USC anymore, and, you know, maybe that's playing into it. And then I thought, you know, but the other thing is USC, this is when they play their best. This is when they go down to Auburn and people are going, ha, you're going to get smoked by that SEC team. You got Cadillac Williams. You got Jason Campbell. You got all these dudes. And, you know, that you can't, you know, War Eagle's going to be going and you guys are going to be sweating because it's going to be 90% humidity. And but USC goes down there and they're like, you know what? We're going to go down there. We're going to prove them wrong. And that's when they usually play their best, is those type of games. And they went against that game at Alabama, and the Jerry Dome has been just cancer for them. It's terrible for them. You don't want to, if they could never go back to the Jerry Dome. Like, if you get invited to any bowl game that's the Jerry Dome or any game, USC should say, no, thank you. Sorry, we're not going to do the Jerry Dome, because they have not played well in the Jerry Dome. And they went to the Jerry Dome and they got smashed. And that's the thing that I remember, this is not that USC teams. I got to remember, this is not those Pete Carroll teams. This is not even the John Robinson teams that, no. You know, they go out and when people actually doubted them and they play better, you know, it's one of those things, they play up because, you know, they've got that talent. And it's just, you know, they don't play well when people just say, oh, yeah, it's USC. They're going to roll their helmets out there and the other team's going to run in the locker room. You know, but they didn't play that way against Alabama. So, you know, what I see, even though they're doubting USC this year, and a lot of, you know, there might be possibility that maybe a Stanford or Utah or somebody looks at them and goes, you know, not a big deal, and they're able to maybe win a game because of that. I think by the time you get to playing at Washington, they're going to be either a good team or a bad team. We're going to know by then. You know, we're going to know by that game that they're going to be a good team, or this is pretty much a continuation of some of the things we've seen the past couple of years, and certainly last year. And then again, and we're rambling here, we're kind of going in circles, but the question becomes, is there a decision to be made there? Is it, okay, we're firing Clay Helton, and we're going to have an interim. It's going to be Clancy. It's going to be Graham. It's going to be one of those guys. Hey, maybe Joe DeForest, you know, we'll make him the interim guy. Whatever. It's going to be interim time. And, you know, then that sort of changes things, obviously, and, you know, it becomes a different conversation of who the new coach is going to be. Or do you say, you know what, no matter what, Clay is going to be our guy, and we are going to look at what the season was after the season. Yeah. We're going to make that determination. And then I say, 8-9 wins, there's going to be a lot of people that are in Heritage Hall that are going to say, Clay Helton is still our guy. Let's give him an extension. The fans are not going to want to hear that. The alumni are not going to want to hear that, no. But there are going to be people that will be proponents of that.
My gut's saying, like, you start off 2-4, they got to get rid of them. I just feel like last year they didn't, you know, Swan, they signed him the extension. They didn't want him to go no matter what. This year I kind of feel like they could. Now, you could be right. I know there's people that like him because he's a yes guy. He's not going to, like, you know, rock the boat or push the envelope. But I think there's going to be some sort of shakeup as well. With the new president coming in, there's a lot of factors at play. So it's really hard to predict.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big deal. We have to see how that shakes out. And, you know, are there going to be big moves? Is it going to be business as usual? It's very interesting. Somebody had posted, and I don't know if you have any information on this, and I have not been able to follow up and get anything more on this, that Carol Folt was actually unanimously voted in by the Board of Trustees. And that was interesting. And then the post was kind of skeptical, and I have to fall in line with that. This is a Board of Trustees that have been at their throats, each other's throats, the past few months. And we've seen it. It's even leaked out publicly, where you've got billionaires lashing out at each other. And we're supposed to believe now all of a sudden they're all on the same page. And they're like, yes, this is our girl. And that's a little bit skeptical of that. That makes me a little concerned about, you know, what changes are going to be made and if there's going to be a new culture and a new direction, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens. But there's obviously a lot of fallout from that. And the main thing, the best thing about it is that's no longer going to be an excuse. you know, oh, we can't do this and we can't do that. We can't hire new this and we can't do because we don't have a president. We are a rudderless ship because we don't have a president. Well, you got a president now. So let's get on with business and let's make the moves that need to be made to make the football program and the athletic department successful again.
Yeah. All right. Well, good stuff, Gerard. Glad we got to knock one of these out. I know the fans on the P really like these. So thanks for being patient. And, you know, send in your questions, podcast@uscfootball.com. And when, you know, once we see the recruiting questions start to pile up a little bit, then we try to do another one of these shows. But yeah, there'll be more recruiting stuff now that there's no like football, spring football. We can do some more recruiting shows and stuff. But thanks again, Gerard. Good stuff.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Gerard Martinez. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We will talk to you next time.